Not all guarantees are created equal. That's what makes the Total Trust Guarantee from Speedy Oil Change and Auto Service so special. It gives you 20/20 vision into the work we do. And now, you can get $10 off any 17-point oil change. Go to speedyoil.com/save for details. Speedy Oil Change and Auto Service, where you're in and out and back on the road with full service and total trust. Most vehicles discount off regular price. See store for details. See website for details on the Total Trust Guarantee.
All right, it's time to talk to the president of baseball ops for your San Francisco Giants. Farhan Zaidi joins us. Farhan, what's going on?
Hey, doing well. Good to talk to you.
Are you thinking now, I mean, have you had any thoughts, especially after the last couple nights, like, God, I mean, I really love what I'm doing, but I don't know. Maybe governor, maybe this is too small for me. Like, there's just more out there.
Well, I don't really know that I've been able to comprehend what happened in those last two games. I'll say, you know, usually I'll exchange text with Cap if I'm not actually at the game and talking about stuff that happened. And last night I just sent him a text saying, "What?" in like all caps. So that was the level of sophistication of our conversation after the game. So really just kind of a pretty awesome turn of events the last couple of games, and obviously it was pretty fired up.
It sounded like my tweet last night. Two words. Again? Seriously? I have no idea, Farhan, I don't know if that's a 2% chance of happening, a 3% chance. It's got to be less than 5% winning those games the way you won those games. And it's got to be less than 5% that any series has three straight games that the team leading going into the ninth inning lost the game. I mean, that's just, I mean, it sounds like you were, I don't want to say you were in disbelief because I know you believe in your team, but, right. I mean, two outs, down two, runner on first, and all of a sudden things just happen. And you guys made them happen. You guys have been doing that all season long, but that one was one that you just walk out of there thinking, yeah, what happened? What do we do?
Yeah, that's really well said. I mean, you're right. You don't want to say it was a fluke because there were so many individual moments where guys, contributed to getting to that unlikely outcome. You know, I mean, everybody has been mentioning Voss's base running play, which was huge, and the quality of at bat. And, I even think about Wilmer kind of dumped into right. He yanked a homer pretty deep up into the stands the other day. You know, you don't know if he's having that thought. You know, Kenley obviously knows he pulled the ball and he's going to pitch him away. So to just go with that pitch and flare it into right field, what a big piece of hitting. So, it's really exciting to see these guys doing what they're doing. And the belief in the clubhouse, you know, whether I believe or we believe is one thing. But, you know, when the belief is in the clubhouse, that's when it manifests itself on the field. And I think that's, you know, what you saw the last couple of nights.
No doubt. Real quick, you mentioned Vossler, and a lot of people were talking about the, you know, secondary lead, good jump, made it into second base, and all those things are certainly valid. The one thing I remember from Vossler, maybe more than anything, is taking that two-strike curveball, which was, it's seemingly, that's watching it on TV, you would know better than I would, that seemed like a hell of a take.
Yeah, I mean, it was an incredible take, and you know, you can't always see this, but in that, you almost see his mind working. Like, I'm starting. Oh wait, that's a curveball. It's going to be in the dirt. I'm holding up, and you know, you can't always see the thought process on those takes, but you could almost see it there. I agree. It was really, really impressive, and you know, Kenley doesn't break out that pitch very often. So when you see it, and when he throws a good one, it's just really hard to lay off because you're geared up for the heater or the cutter. So really, really impressive take there. And obviously that his walk was, you know, a really big part of that rally.
You know, Gabe and the staff deserve a ton of credit. I mean, they obviously worked. They've sold their program to the players. They worked tirelessly on every potential minuscule incremental advantage that they can possibly get. It's clear at this point. But you and your lieutenants in the front office deserve some applause, too, because you guys are consistently staying ahead of this schedule with these transactions with, you know, Tyro Estrada, or you name it. There's like a bunch of examples. But I got to ask you, last time you were on with us, I asked you about the amateur draft, and you said a bunch of things that basically didn't give us any information, and then said the name Will Bednar twice. And then a couple days later, you guys took Bednar. So were you tipping the Bednar pick with us last time you were on?
Maybe subconsciously I should be a little bit more careful about what I'm saying on here, because if I did, it was a mistake. So, but it's possible he was on my mind, because I know that Michael Holmes and his staff really liked him. I think I mentioned him as an example of he's really a redshirt freshman last year, and the fact that you had so many different classes that were going to be eligible because of the lost year last year. So should have chose my examples a little bit more wisely. That was probably too much of a tip.
It's the intense grilling from me that got you to break. It
might have been a little reverse psychology. Like, well, if he mentioned them that blatantly, he can't be the guy that they're taking. So
that's right. Let's throw that name out.
I'll say it that way.
Well, give us your thoughts on where you feel like your club sits. You know, less than a week before the deadline. You're obviously rolling. You don't need to make moves, but there's things that you probably could do to improve your chances, whether it be in season or in the postseason. How do you view where the club's at and what your needs are going into this final week before the deadline next Friday?
Yeah, we do really like our team. And again, some of that belief that, you know, I think had a big part in willing us to the victories the last couple of nights, which we talked about last time we were on. And Tom mentioned that when you start having that belief, it does manifest itself in play on the field. So definitely feel that. And like every club out there, there are probably ways we could improve, nothing that really stands out. I think as much as anything, our greatest concern is we've got five guys in the rotation who are rolling. Aaron Sanchez threw a rehab outing last night. We got Tyler Beattie going in Sacramento tonight. Hopefully he can get rolling too. And so just that starting pitching depth, because, you know, if you have one, two, three starting pitching injuries, you know, that can really accumulate. And we've seen it with, you know, some other teams in our division. It's just kind of hard during the season, certainly after the deadline, to find a starting pitcher if you wind up thin there. So, you know, we like the five guys we have, but it's just a question of what happens if somebody goes down. So I think that's what's first and foremost on our mind going into the last week before the deadline.
I'm gonna try to ask this question this way, because you're not gonna tell us a name, because one, that'd probably be tampering, and two, because that wouldn't be smart, and that's not you. I'm going to ask it this way and see if maybe there's an outside chance you can help me out. I'm going to Vegas. I'm not really, but as an example, I'm going to Vegas. Should I bet on the Giants will trade for a guy that, A, everyone knows, B, most people know, but some people might not, or C, only the hardcore baseball fans will know this guy?
I'm taking D, no comment.
That's so fun.
See, Larry, he tipped again. He said B, no comment. He might have said D, but I'm going to keep it with B just for the heck of it, just to keep the fun going. Let me ask you this, because the trade deadline rules have changed a little bit. How much impetus will there be for teams, and you can't speak for all the teams that are in contention, but your team, that this is it? You get this trade deadline, and then you're done. Does that change anything at all?
It does, and it does from that depth standpoint. When you can't go out there and get somebody later, and in terms of impact players too. I mean, I think this deadline has always been critical, even from an impact player standpoint, because, you know, most guys wouldn't get through waivers with the old rules, but I do think in terms of the depth, that's an area where you feel like, you know, you just can't go out and get players after this point. So we need to make sure that everything we need to get through the end of the season, we have in house. I mean, you know, one way where our targets may be a little bit impacted is there's just not that much season left. So we talk a lot about player development, and in the off season, you can take on guys thinking, hey, if we can help this guy make this adjustment or that adjustment, we might see a totally different level of production. You know, you get to this point and you don't really have time to work with these guys and bet on those adjustments. There's just not enough season left. So it's really more about what you think you can get without any kind of, you know, coaching or intervention or, you know, trying to help a guy make adjustments. Guys kind of, you kind of have to assume guys are what they are at this point.
You know, I put out on Twitter today that you were going to be on with us. And I'm like, you know, if you could ask Farhan a question, what would you ask him? And, of course, there's a lot of questions that we can't ask. But one of the ones that came up that I thought was pretty good was somebody who's asking, I think Orchestra Guy. We'll give Orchestra Guy some credit here. He asked a question that I think is really kind of interesting. He says, what specific changes have the Giants batters made to account for the increase in home runs? How is this taught and coached? I mean, we're seeing a lot of power. Obviously, you guys are hitting home runs at home, on the road, and it's not one guy. It's a bunch of guys. And it seems like a team-wide approach has had a huge impact on it. Give me your perspective on that.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, again, a tribute to, you know, the hitting group and the way they game plan with these guys. And I know that's a generic answer, which is not what you guys are looking for. I mean, we've talked about it. I've heard our players mention it. Austin Slater is one, but I know other guys have used this quote. I mean, Barry Bonds kind of famously said, you know, I never swung at a pitch that I didn't think I could hit for a homer. And I think our group has that mentality. It's not that you're trying to hit a homer on every pitch, but it's just a mentality around plate discipline. You know, this notion of only swinging at pitches that you can do damage on. So, you know, we have guys who in the past maybe would have ended at bats going a little bit out of their zone and hitting a ground ball. Maybe that ground ball gets through, but you're not really giving yourself the best chance to do damage. So I think the selectiveness of this group, you see it with the quality of at bats, just swinging at a higher percentage of pitches that they can do damage on, that they can hit out of the ballpark. And I think that has a big part in, you know, the increase in power of the group as a whole.
You know, it's interesting. We talked to Jeremy Affeldt earlier on today, and I asked him, what percentage of swinging strikeouts come on balls outside the zone? And he said quite a bit because, you know, professional hitters usually can hit or get a piece of balls in the zone unless you just have nasty, nasty stuff. And I've kind of come around on this a little bit, Farhan, in that 3-2 pitch, I used to think, how could you not swing at that? I mean, it's 3-2. Yeah. You got to be able to protect. But the more I watch, especially recently, and maybe it's happened all the time, I just didn't pick up on it, there are so many pitches guys swing at 3-2 that are out of the zone, and not even good pitches that are like really close that they swing at. So I still think you got to protect somewhat, but I kind of understand the mentality a little bit in that the pressure isn't all on me. It's on the pitcher too, and hell, the pitcher may think the pressure's on me, so he might just throw it out of the zone, assuming that I'm going to chase.
Yeah, and you know, you've got sort of the gamesmanship between the hitter and the pitcher, and you've also got the mindset of the hitter. You know, do I feel like I've got to do it all myself, or is there a value in taking a borderline pitch, getting a one, and leaving mm-hmm. it to the next guy? And with the way our offense is going right now, I think it's not only about, I'm not going to swing at that borderline pitch because I don't think I can, you know, really do damage on that pitch. And you know, I've got a chance that it's going to be called ball four. And the other thing is I have trust in the next guy. And, you know, that factors into it as well. So, I mean, it's tough. You look at pitching now and, you know, the amount of pitches that major league pitchers throw in the strike zone, I mean, most guys are at 50% or below. So they're not throwing that many pitches in the zone to begin with. And you're right. I mean, these pitches are nasty. It's hard to really stay in the zone. But the full count game theory and strategy for hitters, I agree, is really, really interesting. And, you know, it says a lot about your philosophy or mentality on offense if you ask the question, would you rather see a guy take strike three on a full count, or would you rather, you know, which is more painful for you,
yeah,
chasing ball four or taking strike three? And, you know, that you could probably back into your offensive philosophy if you answer that question.
Got it.
two-parter here. Where's Will Bednar going to start this summer? Where's what level does Mississippi State, you know, are you guys going to push him aggressively and start him out double A, or is it, are you going to be very conservative? And then, you know, I love some of the way that some of these relievers are coming on. Jose Alvarez is in an awesome rhythm right now, and Garcia, you can almost say the same thing about. I just love the way the lefties in your pen are looking. And you guys are really strong as far as bullpen, if you look at the numbers, but you're like 25th in strikeout rate or 26th. Do you need that? Do you feel like you need that guy who, maybe because of the extra inning rule, maybe just because you need this guy, who can punch people out and you know, strike guys out and not give up contact? Do you feel like you need to add that kind of a piece to your pen?
Yeah, you know, to answer the first question with Bednar, you know, we'll just see where he is. He pitched obviously really deep into the college season through the College World Series. You know, so we're just kind of going to take stock of things, take him offline a little bit, and hopefully get the chance to go out somewhere later this year. And, you know, I don't see him throwing 5, 6, 7 innings a game. Maybe it'll be shorter 2 or 3 inning stints, and we'll just see how it goes. I mean, it's as much as anything building up his innings count for, you know, as a stepping stone to next season. You know, as for our relievers, I think it's a totally reasonable point. I mean, every team wants to have a bullpen that misses a ton of bats, but it's at what cost? I mean, you know, do you want the high strikeout guy who's also a high walk guy who's also, you know, a guy who gives up, you know, homers at a high rate, because those things oftentimes go together in today's game. You know, guys that strike guys out are going deep in counts or throwing pitches out of the zone, and you're going to have to deal with the walks. You're going to have to deal with, you know, guys who are trying to miss bats up in the zone, which is where you're at risk for greater damage. So, yeah, I mean, if you give me a choice of two pitchers, you know, all things equal, and one guy has a higher strikeout rate, I'll take that every time. But, but, you know, often it comes at a trade-off. And to your point, some of our guys may not be elite in that strikeout category, but throw strikes, keep the ball in the ballpark, and that's part of why our bullpen as a whole has functioned well. But every team in baseball, us included, could, you know, use another reliever who, you know, misses a lot of bats and has really good bottom-line performance. So that's certainly something that's going to be on our shopping list like it is for every contender.
All right, I'm going to reach into the archives here to things I've wanted to ask you, but I keep forgetting. It's just one of those things. But I happen to remember this on this Friday, so I'm going to ask it. I don't even know if it's a good question or not, but I'm going to ask it because it's been on my mind. How much can you learn about a pitcher in two counts, a 3-0 count or an 0-2 count? Because to me, I've always thought 3-0, I want a guy that can still be around the zone, if not throw a strike, without teeing it up. And 0-2, I want a competitive pitch without giving you something you can drive.
Yeah. I think the 3-0 count says a lot, and I'm not basing that on years of analytics research. I'm basing it on the emotional swings of watching a pitcher walk a guy on 4 pitches. So, I mean, you know, you're thinking, you know, you're in the big leagues, and it's a 3-0 count. And you don't want to walk this guy. If you can't throw a strike here, what is that saying? Now, easier yes. said than done. And I'm actually really surprised how often a guy walks someone on 4 pitches and then comes back and executes 3 or 4 pitches perfectly to the next hitter. So I think that speaks to the fact that sometimes you can just lose it for a couple of pitches. But, you know, that says a lot. And the best pitchers in baseball, the best starting pitchers in baseball in particular, they fall behind 3-0 and they can execute perfect 3-0 pitches every time. And I think that's part of what makes those guys so good. You know, the 0-2 one, I don't know, as much as anything, I think, you know, the game is so strikeout-centric now that guys waste 0-2 pitches a lot. I mean, I was around Greg Maddux some. He was a special assistant in L.A. during some of my time there. He will always say, you know, I get ahead 0-2. I want to put the guy away. I don't want to waste any pitches. And, you know, for him, it was just about executing a perfect pitch. But, you know, he was generally trying to throw a strike, whether it was, you know, painting the black or throwing a pitch that he was sure that the hitter would offer at. And, you know, nowadays I think you see, you know, a lot of elevated pitches that are a foot up and out of the zone or, you know, 58-foot breaking ball. And, you know, non-competitive pitches, easy takes, and that's just come from, you know, the focus on strikeouts. So I think there's an adjustment that some guys can make and a potentially an advantage from continuing to attack in that count.
Yeah, I've always thought with 0-2, the pitchers that can do that are one that have belief in themselves and belief in their control, and they know you. They know they can give you a pitch that looks like a strike that may entice you. You may not swing at it or not, but they're not going to give you something to drill. And the other guys are the ones that have it in their heads, oh, I can't throw a strike 0-2. I can't give up a hit 0-2. That's the worst thing in the world if I do that. So they're like, well, what the hell? I'm just going to throw one way outside or way up and hope he chases. And I always think, well, hell, you might as well just told him, let's go to 1-2. Because I don't even want to throw this near the plate anyway. So I've always thought 0-2 was kind of telling in the confidence you have in your ability to put a pitch where you want to put a pitch.
No question. And this is a shout out to Kipe. Hope he's doing well.
Yes, absolutely.
But you know, obviously really miss him. But you know, one of the things I miss the most is how, you know, he'll say 0-2 to 3-2 with such derision for the pitcher.
Yeah.
Like 0-2 to 3-2. And I feel the same way, you know, and I think that has a lot of what you're talking about. It's like, continue to attack, you know, don't give up your advantage throwing non-competitive pitches. And again, I think sometimes with the advanced game planning and with the strikeout focus, you know, we may have kind of indoctrinated some of these guys into trying to throw too perfect of a pitch in that count and wind up wasting some pitches.
Yeah. All right, well, we knew we wouldn't get anything out of your trade deadline, and rightfully so. But maybe we can get this out of you. And for those Farhan underlings that are listening, turn your radio off so he may answer this truthfully. And underlings, my word, not his. Fantasy football sleeper.
You know what? I haven't really done my homework yet, so
what? That's a good
answer. I may be vulnerable. I may be vulnerable this year.
You know, I don't believe that, Farhan.
Just gamesmanship or the truth? But
you haven't done your homework yet.
I don't believe that. There's two.
I mean, you only had the trade deadline in the amateur draft. You had plenty of time to go through these names. It's very disappointing.
I'm gonna admit this. I was going through the airport on my way back and forth to Arizona where we did the draft. And on my way back home, I went into, you know, a bookshop, which I haven't done it. And I mean, I've been in many airports, but I haven't done that in a really long time. And I picked up one of those fantasy football magazines. That's kind of how desperate I am in my preparation right now. I'm going to the magazine rack at the airport. So
did you highlight it? Will you take out a highlighter and highlight it?
Nah, I haven't stooped that low. I mean, I just kind of flipped through it, and I was like, yeah, I'm going to prepare better for this later. So, but, yeah, once the highlighter comes out, you know I'm in trouble.
You know what? That's even worse than giving out a sleeper, because the guys you beat this year, they're going to be like, hey, we just lost to a dude who you got to go to Airport Magazine and beat us.
Seriously.
Yeah, no, it's, you know, maybe I'm just putting out that, you know, getting them a little overconfident before really putting the squeeze on, so.
So you know what you do at the draft? You walk in and you maybe walk in the way like maybe a Conor McGregor would walk in and say, "Hey, I got Tyro Estrada for cash, MFers." All right.
You know what? I'm probably going to be walking in with that magazine completely worn out from the fact that it's my only preparation. So
I think you should walk in there for a hunt and go. Does anybody know if Adrian Peterson still plays? I don't even know.
I'd love to hear a voicemail to Scott, your GM, saying, "Hey, you know what? Give me a list of who you think my best first five round guys should be, just to see his reaction as he's looking at that voicemail." That'd be great.
Yeah, I got a little bit of that, you know, in the old days with Billy and you know, our front office there. He tried to steal my homework for the fantasy draft, and I wasn't having it. So,
yeah. Hey, Farhan,
stage of my career now.
As always, we always enjoy the conversation, and I know you're having fun. I know the fans are having a lot of fun. We're having a lot of fun watching this team. It's not just about the wins and not just about how you guys have done it, especially the last couple nights. It's more about the team, that's out on the field, and how not only they compete, but they all pitch in. It's not just the same two or three guys every single night, and if they don't get it done, then your chances of winning are greatly diminished. It's just it really is a whole team. It's a bunch of different players. One night it could be a couple guys. One night it could be a couple different guys. And I know they probably feel like everyone is contributing to the record you have, and they would be right. And that's one of the reasons it's really fun to watch.
Yeah, I really appreciate that. And you know, we got a long way to go and a lot we still want to accomplish, but trying to enjoy the ride. I will say, Tom Tolbert on my shoulder last night with Tom, you better enjoy the heck out of this win. You better enjoy it.
I don't even know if you enjoyed it as much as I did, but you may have. Who knows? Hey, Farhan, thank you so much. We always appreciate the conversation. Best of luck, and we'll talk to you after the trading deadline.
All right, great talking, guys. Bye.
Thanks,
Farhan. Appreciate it. He's fun to talk to. He really is.
Not all guarantees are created equal. That's what makes the Total Trust Guarantee from Speedy Oil Change and Auto Service so special. It gives you 20/20 vision into the work we do. And now, you can get $10 off any 17-point oil change. Go to speedyoil.com/save for details. Speedy Oil Change and Auto Service, where you're in and out and back on the road with full service and total trust. Most vehicles discount off regular price. See store for details. See website for details on the Total Trust Guarantee.